Hello and welcome to a Burkamp Wonderland, an Arsenal podcast. I'm Guna Gimli and tonight my guests are, I'll do them as a collective, we've got Danny, Chris, Josh and special guest Jay Bothroyd. Hello Jay.
Hello guys, how's it going?
It's a pleasure to have you on, knowing that you've been asked by a certain fan TV. It's an honour for us to get the exclusive, so it's a pleasure to have you here.
It's nice to speak to you guys.
It's about 7:30 in the morning with you, something like that?
Yeah, 7:15.
Danny, it's not the first time we've done a podcast with someone in Japan, is it?
No, we did it when Arsenal, we did it with Colm, he was an Englishman teaching English in a Japanese school when Arsenal toured Japan about 4 years ago.
And we played Urawa Reds or something like that, wasn't it? I remember, I'm just murdering the Japanese language.
What was the score in that game?
Chris will go and find that out. I'll leave that up to him.
The stats there.
Already on it.
Danny, if you'd like to tell us a little bit about Jay's long career.
Yes, we don't want to give Jay's age away, but he's 35. He's 6'3", so no one's going to argue with him. He's an Islington boy, which I didn't realise. Been a Gooner all of his life, and I'm just looking at my Arsenal football yearbooks, and apparently he made his debut in the for the under-17s on the 13th of September 1996, away at my local team, Cambridge United, 0-0. I won 5-4 on penalties, and you played the last 15 minutes. You came on for a bloke called Oates.
So that Greg Oates?
That probably was Greg
Oates. Yeah, Greg Oates. That would have been,
and then your under-19 debut before you made your under-17 debut. So I think that was the 17th of Jan, 97, 2-1 v Palace. You came on for a bloke called Douglas. And then you should remember this game, your second game for the under-19s. So you went at Southampton, you beat them 7-3, and you were an 18-minute sub for Omar Rizza, and you scored a goal. Do you remember that?
No.
You know, when we had Dave Hillier on, we're reading all this stuff and he goes, mate, I don't remember any of it. Can we just make it up then, Dave?
Yeah. I remember the Cambridge game because I remember thinking, bloody hell, these guys are huge. And I come on and got battered. But yeah, I remember that game. But I don't remember Southampton.
Oh, then you made your debut for the under-17s that season on 27th of September. Lost 2-0 away at Charlton. You played the last 75 minutes. So in all competitions in 96-97, you got 6 goals in 14 games. That's not bad for I think you must have been about 16 then. So I think it's because you were so big. That's why you were playing for the under-19s.
Yeah, but I was really skinny. I remember we played in a friendly game and I was playing against Ken Moncal. He was huge. I think it could have been that game against Southampton. He was huge. He just bullied me the whole game. I was looking at the bench saying, can you bring me off?
Your next season, 98-99, for the under-19s, 3 goals in 10 games. But remember, you were only about 18 at the time. And in the under-17s, 11 goals in 16 games. Now, that's a really good season. And then your final season with the youth, just as you were about to make it through to the first team, 99-2000, the under-19s, 9 goals in 22 games. And then in the Youth Cup, 3 goals in 10 games. And then that was a two-legged final, which is where I think Coventry realised how good you were. Beat them 3-1 at their place, 2-0 at our place. You scored the first and Steve Sidwell scored the second.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, I remember that clearly.
And then there's that game. I was reading your interview that you did, that you said that you were just a angry young man and there was a few of you. So the playoff final in that league, you played 22 games in the league that season. And then the league was then split up with all the other leagues and then you got the playoffs. So the first leg playoff of the final, away at West Ham, drew 5-5. And you started that game up front. And Ashley Cole played, Jermaine Pennant, Stuart Taylor. What do you remember about that game?
I don't remember the details, but I remember the only competition for us at the time was West Ham. So it was like everyone else was kind of like just, you know, taking part. And we knew we would play with West Ham at some point in the final or playoff or whatever. So those games were always kind of grudge games.
In the second leg, it was at Arsenal and it was 1-1 at home. And they lost 4-2 on penalties. And again, it was Pennant and Cole and this time Graham Stacking goal. And that's you got taken off, substituted off. And I think it was at half time. And I think you were a little bit angry and you threw your shirt on the floor. And
it was during the game I got subbed. And I was kind of influenced. At the time, it's funny because I always say this, like, you know, the area I come from is quite a rough area. In my mind, I was like quite an aggressive young man at the time and immature. But I just remember thinking, like, why is he bringing me off for? Like, I'm playing well. Like, there's other players that are playing rubbish that you've kept on the pitch. And he pulled me off. And what pissed me off the most is David Noble. Like, we was arguing over to take a free, who was going to take a free kick. And like, I wanted to take it. David Noble wanted to take it. And then David Noble, like, pointed at the bench. And I looked over and, like, my number was up. So that made me TV even more. And then as I was walking off, I just like lost my head, and then I just took my shirt off and threw it like in the direction of, like, I kind of just dropped it more than a throw. I just kind of dropped it on the in the direction of the bench, but Don Howe was sitting down, and it hit him in the head, and that made it even worse. So,
yeah, because you later credited Don Howe for making you the player that you were, didn't you? So it wasn't anything personal against Don Howe.
No, he's probably the best coach I ever had. Yeah, definitely, he was amazing.
So then after that incident, Arsenal told you you were on the transfer list. And then I think because of your performance against Coventry in the two-legged cup final, they agreed to sign you. So in the summer of 2000, you signed for Coventry for just over £1 million. Why Coventry? Was that the only team that came in for you?
No, there were teams that I was speaking to, like other Premier League teams. You know, even Tottenham and people like that. But I remember I spoke to Gordon Strachan, and he said to me that, you know, you're going to be involved in a first-team squad. So that kind of... that turned me on, because at the time, in that era, no one my age was playing in the first team. It was like, you know, reserve team football was special. You know, it was like, oh, who's going to be in the reserve this week? You know, that kind of thing. You know, because at that time, you know, players that didn't play in the first team would come and play in the reserves. Like first team players, you could be playing against, you know, I've played against Ledley King and people like that in the reserves against Tottenham. You know, so it was like kind of a high level. So like when he told me that I'd be involved with the first team squad, and you know, they at the time Coventry were a good club. I think they were like finishing around mid table kind of thing. You know, they had like Hadji there, you know, that Yusuf Chippo, Robbie Keane was there. You know, they had some good players there. And I thought, you know, why not? You know, if I can go and train with the first team every day and be involved around the first team, why would I not want to do that? You know, rather than go somewhere like to a club like, I don't know, Tottenham or Aston Villa or whatever, and like be a youth team player still, playing in the reserves.
Yeah, because in your last season for Arsenal, you played five reserve games, mixing with the first team, and I think six games, five and one sub. You scored three goals. Now, for someone who's, what were you, 17 at the time?
Yeah,
that was magnificent. I'm just looking here. Nelson Vivas was in there, and Jermaine Aliadier is a miracle. Yeah. I can say that name, and some of the big names from the first team were there.
No, it was good. I remember Arsenal, like we was like a cocky bunch of lads, you know. We was always really confident. Like we used to play games against the first team and beat them, like that actual starting 11. We used to play like in, you know, like sometimes we'd be like 11v11 or something like that if there was an international break, and we'd play against them and we would beat them sometimes. And people like Martin Keown used to smash the life out of people, like Wherry's long studs. You know, Tony Adams as well, like, was, you know, super aggressive. They never wanted to lose a game in training, you know. And, of course, like, when we used to beat them, we used to take the piss. And they hated it. They hated it. But we was a good side coming up, you know, a lot of good individuals. But we had a team spirit, like, of just banter. And, you know, I think that kind of went to our heads almost, because, you know, a lot of us, you know, if you look at our careers, a lot of us, I thought, you know, probably Stephen Sidwell was the quietest one. You know, everyone else was like had a loud mouth, had an opinion, had a chip on their shoulder kind of thing. But yeah, no, it was, I had a good time at Arsenal, a really good time, and I wouldn't have swapped it, you know, for anything else.
People now will think that Coventry City, they're not a very big team, but when you signed for them, they were a Premier League team, and unfortunately they went down in your first season. Not much to do with you, because you only managed to get 8 Premier League games, but as a young man, that must have been an invaluable experience. And then the next season in the First Division Championship now, you scored 6 in 31. Next season, you got 8 in 33. And then the bit that I remember most from you is seeing you on Soccer AM when they were talking to you every week about your move to Perugia and saying what you've been doing there. And I didn't realise that one season that you were there, you played up front with Ravanelli for the whole season. That was the last season he played football.
I was pretty close to Fabrizio at the time because my Italian wasn't good at all. And, you know, obviously he can speak English. So I was kind of always with him. You know, we used to go out, we used to have dinner, that kind of thing. And he's from Perugia as well. So I was always close to him. But I had a great time in Italy. My first season, you know, was pretty good. Like, in Serie A at that time, you know, you didn't really get... like, Shevchenko was in the league, and like, he would score, like, 20 goals. And that was considered, like, amazing to score 20 goals. And that's him being at a top team. And I think I scored, like... 6 goals, and then like, I don't know, 3 or 4 in the cup. I remember I finished with like 9 goals, but it's not documented that way on the internet. But I remember I had a good season, and I remember in the Christmas transfer window, it's funny because I could have gone to Inter Milan at the time, but my Perugia blocked it, and they said they want €10 million or something like that. And obviously it didn't happen, but it was just really unfortunate because I was, you know, when you're linked to a massive club like that, you're just like, and then you don't, you know, and then your club rejects it, you don't even want to play football no more.
Must have been hard. Because I was just looking at your stats for that season, and you scored in the very first game of the season and the very last game of the season. If you, I think that last game of the season finished 1-0, and if you wouldn't have scored that goal to make it 1-0, then Perugia would have been automatically relegated. I think that was it. But you managed playing in the playoffs against one of the teams from Serie B, and you lost the first leg 1-0, and then the away leg was 1-1. And I was just looking, the bloke who scored both those goals for Fiorentina, they're the only two goals he ever scored for the club, and he's 41 now, and according to the wiki, he's still playing. he got you relegated. What shit, mate? Chris, have you got anything to ask him about his time in Italy?
In Italy, yeah. When you were in Perugia, Jay, and when you went over to the other country, it's probably an obvious question to ask, but it fascinates me. How different a culture was it? You described your upbringing, you know, in London as quite a rough area. You were still quite young at the time. That's a huge move to make to a completely foreign country, if it's fair to say, an unfashionable Italian side. Was it sort of a chance for you to really experience a new life and almost get back on track, or did you just see it as a career opportunity at the time?
No, I looked at it as something that I wanted to do. I always, you know, me and my dad, after I played for Arsenal, you know, we always used to go home and we used to watch that Italian football on Channel 4. And I always remember thinking, man, I'd love to play in Serie A one day. So, like, that was kind of a dream of mine. And when the opportunity came around that I could go and play in Serie A, you know, I kind of jumped at the chance because I was thinking, okay, yeah, it can be difficult. But the way I looked at it was, you know, it's only a few hours away on a plane. So, you know, it's not like I can't get back, you know, if I need to. But actually, when I got there, it was really difficult because I joined the squad and they was training in some remote place in the mountains. And at that time, you know, people didn't really speak English. So I went there and the players that could speak English were away on international duty. So, like, it was people like, we had a player from Nigeria that was away, an Australian goalkeeper, a Greek player. You know, so like the only players that were there were the Italian players and hardly any of them could speak. So my phone bill for that month was like €7,000. And I was like, shit, man, this is a joke. Like, you know, it was difficult. You know, I used to call home, speak to my parents and my girlfriend at the time and just say, like, I think I can't do this, you know, kind of thing. And they was all really supportive. They were saying, listen, it's the beginning, blah, 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 blah. And then when we got back to Perugia, things just started getting better because Perugia is not far from Florence, it's not far from Rome. So, like, when we had time off, I would always go there, and you know, then I started making friends, and it just got better and better, really.
Yeah, because it's a rare move to make. I think the most only close thing I can compare it to is Kyle Lafferty played for Palermo recently. That's like the closest I can think of a sort of a youngish British player going abroad, you know, in a team that maybe not many people would have thought he would have played for. The only other question I had for you in the sort of Italian period of your career, there were some amazing footballers at that period of time, as there are today. Who was the best player you played against in Serie A when you were there?
You know, so many people ask me this question, and I always say, like, it's probably best you just ask me a position, and then I can tell you, because, like you said, there were so many. You know, the best goalkeeper was Buffon.
Yeah.
The best centre half was Maldini. I would say the best defensive midfielder would have been Pirlo. Mm. The best attacking midfielder would have been Kaká. Best striker, you know, probably Shevchenko.
That's quite a five-a-side team, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not bad. But then, yeah. I mean, you know, I think my third game in Serie A was against AC Milan. And I remember sitting in the dressing room thinking, man, I'm playing against AC Milan today. And then the manager, like, read out the team. He put the team on the board of what they're going to be playing. You know, he's like, oh, they're playing, you know, a diamond in midfield, you know, four at the back and, you know, two up front. And I was like, and then I, like, started reading the names and it's like, was it Maldini, Cafu, Kaladze, Pirlo, Gattuso, Seedorf, Kaká, Shevchenko, Inzaghi. And I was like, shit, man, this is when I was like, oh my God, I'm in Serie A now. Like, that's when I actually realised, because the first couple of games, I think we played like Siena and Parma, maybe. Mm. And Parma like had some players. They had Adriano, and they had, I think they had Nakata at the time as well, people like that, and Bresciano. But then when we played AC Milan, it was like, wow, this is like, this is real now.
Yeah.
And it was a great experience, to be honest. To like compete against that caliber of player.
I can imagine. Josh, you've got a few things you wanted to ask, probably more closer to home, I think.
Yeah, there was just a couple of things I wanted to ask you, Jay. Start first with just in general coming through the Arsenal dressing room. You said there was a lot of banter between the lads. Have you got any stories that you're able to share with us about your time in there? I've heard Graham Stack was a bit of a handful.
Yeah, he's one of my best mates, and he's godfather to my son. It's funny, but I've known Graham Stack since like we was 9 years old. We used to play Sunday football against each other, so like I've always had a good relationship with Stacky. But yeah, he was like, he always seemed to get into mischief but get away with it. Like someone like, if I'd done the same thing, I would get caught for sure. But there was one particular scenario when. It was just around the time when everyone was doing their driving lessons and driving tests and whatnot. And Stacky passed his test first. And he went out and he bought this this Citroen Saxo. And he was always bubbling around in it, like a bright blue one. One day, we had to go back to Highbury on the coach. At London Colney, there was this kind of like long driveway. And He was asking the guy who drives the coach, Lawrence, at the time. He's like, "Come on, Lowe, let me have a go, man. I can drive it just up the driveway. I can drive the coach and all that stuff." And then finally, Lawrence gave in and was like, "All right, then we'll give you a go." And then he went to put it in first, but on a coach, I think first is like reverse on a coach. So he went flying down the kind of driveway. In reverse, like laughing, looking back at all the boys and all that stuff. And then Lawrence was like, wait, stop. So he stopped, and then he's like, where's the first then? So he put it in, then he showed him, he put it in first, he's like, okay then. But what Lawrence used to do, like, because we was all like, when we used to go training, we'd be like standing up talking, so he's kind of used to like chug the coach to make everyone sit down. So like, obviously Stacky started doing that, but he pressed the brake too hard. And Lawrence like went flying through the windscreen of the coach, and everyone burst out like in crying with laughter. And Stacky was like red faced. He was like, "Please, James, shut up. Please, don't laugh," and all this stuff. And I don't know how they worded it with Arsenal. I don't know what happened, but I just remember Lowe like plastered against the windscreen in his head. You know, all the cracks were like coming away from his head on the windscreen. And that was one of the funny ones. But we used to get up to mischief all the time. Like it was like a daily routine. It was like, you know, there was daily fights, there was daily arguments. There was like, you know, it was fun. It was like, it was almost like you're going to play football at Arsenal, but you're just going to like hang around with your mates almost.
Jay, who taught Jeremy Aliadier his Essex twang? Because to this day, that amuses me. Every time I hear him interviewed, I'm a Lorient follower in France, and he's got quite close connections to Lorient. And every time you hear him interviewed, it's just the most bizarre accent I've ever heard. Did you?
To be perfectly honest, guys, Jeremy Aliadier, like, is a good lad and whatnot. But at the time, he never fitted into our group. He never really spoke. Mm. Yeah, he came over late. He wasn't. You know, we was already together for like a few years before. Even when Jermaine Pennant came, he had to work his way in like with us. It was kind of like we had our group, and like Jeremy was kind of, he lived in Cockfosters. So like when we was on the coach on the way back to London, he would always be the first one off the coach, you know, which is about, Cockfosters from London Colney is about 15 minutes. So like he never really integrated with us that well. You know, it's only like after he left Arsenal and after I left Arsenal that I bumped into him a few times and started speaking to him and whatnot. But he kind of never, we never really hung around with him, to be honest.
Mm. Late developer.
Yeah.
Kim, do you want to shoot him?
Yeah. So obviously we've heard about
Jay the footballer. We'd like to hear about Jay the gooner. So just a few quick fire questions. I know you haven't got long, so we'll keep it brief. First of all, Jay, and it is the most important one, Wenger in or Wenger out?
Do you know what? To be honest, it's a painful question, but I think I love Wenger. I love what he's done for the club. I love what he's done for English football. I love what he's done for myself, you know, for all the players that came up. You know, I think he really improved us and made us, you know, players that we wouldn't have been hadn't he arrived. And, you know, I have to say, I think it's time for him to just move on now. You know, whether it be, I think he should go and try and manage a national team now. But, you know, I'm told that he loves the day-to-day stuff still. So, I don't know, but I can't see him leaving unless he gets sacked. And I don't think Arsenal are going to sack him. So, you know, I think he's going to be there. But I do think it's time for, like, a new regime.
I mean, obviously, we've just lost to Tottenham. Fan spirits aren't massively high. Just out of curiosity, on the back of what would be considered a major loss to Tottenham, how would he deal with the players in the dressing room? Would he just be quiet with them? Would he pick anyone out for their failures? Or would it just be a heads down and we'll move on?
I think he would. No, he's not that kind of manager. I've never heard him shout. I think there was only one time apparently he ever shouted, and I think that was when they got spanked against Man United, like whatever it was, like 7-something or 8, whatever it was. I don't know. I think that was the only time he shouted. But he's not that way. He's more like, you know, he'll speak to you and say, you know, I need you to do this. You know, you wasn't good at doing this. You know, I'm going to leave you out this week because of this and blah blah blah. He's kind of like, he'll come to you and speak to you rather than shout at you in front of everyone. You know, I think that's half the reason why Arsenal are kind of, you know, like I said, listen, I'm an Arsenal fan. And, you know, to me, when I see the way Arsenal are going now, Arsenal are a team that, you know, could end up in mid-table team again. They could, because, you know, teams like Everton are spending money now. You know, Liverpool are spending money. All these teams are spending money, but Arsenal are kind of getting left behind. Then they're offering people like, you know, they're buying Aubameyang for 50-something million. Don't get me wrong, he's one of the best strikers in the world. And he's got a great goal-scoring record. But he's 28 years old. At least if you're going to spend big money on someone, you know, like people like Pogba, you know, they're like 22 years old. You know, at least you could probably resell them and get some of your money back. Whereas, in, you know, Aubameyang, he stays there for 2 years, he's 30. If you really want to resell him, how much are you going to get for him? You know, to me, that was kind of a panic buy.
As I was going to say, spoken like a true gooner, we've no sooner have we got the player in that we're already trying to work out how much we can get for him in a few years when he's got sulky and he wants to move on.
But that's the thing, no top player wants to play at a club that isn't in the Champions League. Arsenal don't, even if you could get a player, what are you going to offer him? Because Arsenal don't want to pay big salaries. So it's not like you can say, oh, come to our club, here's 350 grand a week. You know, our plan is to get back into the Champions League. You know, they're offering people stupid money. That's why people like Ashley Cole left in the first place. You know, you offer him a 10 grand a week pay rise. He's probably like top three left backs in the world at the time. And you offer him stupid money just because you don't want to, you know, break your wage structure for I don't know, whatever it may be. That's why Arsenal's always been. Arsenal's like a selling on club now. They're not competing, and it's sad because, you know, when you look at the Invincibles, and then, you know, they broke up. Arsene Wenger broke up the Invincibles within 18 months. Like, how is that even possible that you let all these people go? You're not giving people contracts at 30 years old. Like, why not? It's painful. Like, when I see Tottenham beat Arsenal, I mean, you expect it now. You expect it.
I tweeted after the game. I have to say this. It's kind of, normally after a North London derby and when we lose, obviously, just recently, it's only become commonplace. But I used to just be the most insufferable dickhead to live with for the next at least a week. It was just like moping about, really down. And after this one, it was just like, do you know what? I've been there, I've done that, and I kind of expect it. And I think, from Arsenal this season, the only thing that they've really taught me is be gracious in defeat and move on to the next game. And that doesn't send out positive signals to a fan base, does it, Jay?
No, but the thing, listen, I'm on this show today and I'm speaking, like, I speak very frank. You know, people can say whatever they want to say about my career, but at the end of the day, when I was in the playground, I wanted to play for England, I wanted to play for, in the Premier League, I wanted to earn a lot of money, and I've done all three. So in my eyes, my career is successful. Of course, it could have been better, but hey. But when I speak about Arsenal, for me, Arsenal's, too many of Arsenal players are just in a comfort zone. You know, and it's kind of like, he's almost giving people contracts because they're quiet or because they don't cause problems at the training ground. And I think, you know, if I was a manager, I'd want people knocking on my door. I'd want people like saying, listen, I want to play. And if you're not going to play me, you know, sell me. You know, but they're not. The people just love to come to Arsenal and then they want to stay there their whole career. I've spoken to a few Arsenal players that have left. You know, I mean, Sami Nasri, I remember he was saying, you know, I'd love to stay at Arsenal my whole career. But Man City are offering me 100 grand a week more than what Arsenal are offering me. So what can I do? You know, them kind of conversations. And it's like, unless Arsenal are prepared to do what the other teams are doing, Arsenal are never going to be in the Champions League.
Mm. Do you think, Jay, that the signs of that come from or speak loudly involving the Aubameyang transfer when apparently how it went down? I'm going to go off Ornstein, the Oracle. Yeah. Obviously, we went to Dortmund and we said we want Aubameyang. How much is he going to cost? They said in the region of 60 million euros. We lowballed them with an offer. They said, OK, if you're going to offer that, we need a Giroud with it. By then, he was chucked in. His head was turned. Obviously, it all went down. Batshuayi moved. Giroud went the other way. Do you think that that could have been combated by Arsenal not penny pinching, and just going, OK, what do you want? 60 million. Thank you very much. Done. And then we wouldn't be in this predicament where I'm sure you're aware we've lost Lacazette for 4 to 6 weeks, which in Arsenal terms is probably nearer 2 months. Do you think that could all be avoided by the penny pinching that goes on at the club?
Yeah, definitely. I think this whole situation could have been avoided if you give Sanchez 350 grand a week when he wants it. Because I think in this day and age, what you have to understand is players don't look at their club. They look at the clubs like Man City, Man United, and they're looking at what their top players are getting paid. Players don't care about what, you know, who cares if someone like, I don't know, like Jack Wilshere's the next one. He's up for a contract. Okay, he's saying he's a Gunner through and through. But if Arsenal are going to offer him 150 grand and someone like Man City are going to offer him 250 grand, he's going to be stupid to say no. Everyone in any job in the world would not say no. They're going to accept it because who wouldn't? You know, what they should have done was they shouldn't have let people like Sanchez, people like, well, Ozil's re-signed, so that's good. But they shouldn't let them run down their contract. I think they should do what Daniel Levy does. They always give their players long deals. They never let them run out. They always like re-sign them with like 2 years to go or three, 2.5 years to go. And I think Arsenal penny pinching lost one of the best players in the world. You know, if you ask me, who would I rather have, Sanchez or Aubameyang? The answer is Sanchez, for sure. Aubameyang's one of the best strikers in the world, but Sanchez, to me, can win games alone. Like, there's plenty of times when Arsenal are playing crap and he does something and scores a goal. And I think even that's the difference between him and Ozil. When Ozil plays well, it's because the team's playing well. I don't think I've seen Ozil have a great game if the team's been shocking.
No, he's never been a standout performer. You can never go, oh, well, the team was bad, but Ozil was good today. Right, Jay, I'm going to hand you over to the other panellists. I know your time's short, but I think they've got just another couple of questions
to
ask.
No, I'm good.
Are you good?
I'm good. I'm good for time. Yeah, I'm good for time.
Didn't we say at the start of the show that you come on, give us half an hour? We've had it all. We've had Crossy on the show. He was only going to give us 20 minutes from a Turkish airport. Stay 2 hours.
Matt Lucas, give us 3 hours.
I'm all right for time.
Can I go through a few more bits of your career? Because like you were saying, you had a good career. You've played 62 Premier League games for 5 Premier League clubs. How many people can say they've played for 5 Premier League clubs?
That's a good thing, though.
Well, yeah, I mean, personally, I'd be quite happy with it. In fact, this is just a quick thing. Many years ago on an Arsenal forum, I did a thing where I said, you've got 20 years, tell me your football career. Most of them said Arsenal the entire time. I thought, that's not logical. You can't do that. You're not going to do a Tony Adams. My career, I went off and played in Japan for my team, Yokohama, and I wanted to play in Brazil for my team, Corinthians. Like Kazim Richards is there now playing for my team, and I play for Celtic and Peterborough and Barnet. And I think your career is magnificent. It's such a great story than just kicking around playing for one or two clubs in your time. But Perugia let you go on loan to Blackburn Rovers. Have you got anything you'd like to say about that loan? Because you 11 Premier League games, one goal. That's not bad.
Well, I mean, to be honest, it could have been better. I got a really bad injury when I was there. It's probably, I mean, it's been my only injury. I like ruptured my quad muscle, it kept me out for like five months. It was quite bad. But I remember, like, I went to Blackburn because, you know, Perugia was in Serie B, and I didn't want to play in Serie B. I wanted to play like in the top league. And you know, it's funny because Graham Souness signed me, and then literally a week later, he left and went to Newcastle. So I was like, oh, thanks. Then Mark Hughes came in with Eddie Nowitzki and Mark Bowen. And, you know, when a manager comes in, obviously, he always wants to make signings. And, you know, it's kind of always difficult because once a manager makes a signing, he's going to stick by that signing and play him. And that's kind of the way I was. You know, I did get in the team and I did play a few games. I think I played against Norwich, got sent off for violent conduct. And, you know, I played against Liverpool. And we drew 1-1 and I scored. That was actually the game that Jubal Cisse broke his leg for, which was pretty horrific. But, you know, Blackburn's a good club. It was a really good club at the time. And, you know, I had good players. Was competing, you know, not for the title or anything, but you know, it wasn't an easy place to come to, you know, and it was really enjoyable.
Yeah, good. Yeah, because I remember you signing for Blackburn because, like I said, they used to see you on Soccer AM and they used to talk to you every couple of weeks, didn't they? And so now you're getting on over there and what you were doing. I thought that was really interesting, having a young Englishman playing abroad. Then after the loan at Blackburn, Perugia, did they sell you to Charlton or did they just did you go on a free?
No, yeah, I left on a free because the chairman decided that he doesn't want to pay anyone anymore. And he just left. He left Italy. He went to, you know, Santo Domingo, and he just took his money with him and said, like, you know, F it, you know, I'm done, kind of thing. So like everyone kind of got a free, like they was free to leave if they wanted to.
So what was
so
it like
when I came back?
I'm just looking at when you were at Charlton, you didn't play against Arsenal when you were at Charlton. I'm just looking if you played against Arsenal at Blackburn. You didn't, but you did score a goal for Blackburn against Liverpool. That must have been pretty. Yeah. But did you play many times against Arsenal? And what was it like? I know you did for Cardiff.
I didn't. I played the interview. Yeah, I played for Cardiff. Yeah, that was that. Yeah, I played against Arsenal for Cardiff, and I remember that was a pretty good game actually. We was a bit disappointed that we lost that, to be honest, but. Yeah, I remember that game, and it's weird because, you know, coming back to Arsenal, I always felt like I was, even though I didn't play in the Premier League with Arsenal, I always felt that I was like an Arsenal boy because I was there from like 10 years old. So it was always difficult, but I like, you know, it was always nice going back there because I got to see all the staff, I got to, you know, speak to the manager again, and you know, some of the players, the youth team boys, it was good.
Yeah, I'm just looking at it. It's 0-0 in the FA Cup at your place, and then you came back to Arsenal, and Arsenal won 4-0. And yeah, some of the names you
that's
come
a game,
up against.
Yeah, that's the game I'm talking about. I'm talking about the 0-0 one.
yeah. So then we've had actually someone ask quickly if you would just want, I don't know if you want to say anything about Wolves. That what do you think? Because you spent two seasons at Wolves. You had like 9 goals in 33 games in your first season in the Championship. Someone sent I think it might have been a Wolves fan sent in a question. I can't remember what the gist of it, but was what do you think about what's going on at Wolves at the moment and how they're doing it?
Yeah, new revolution that's going on at Wolves, because haven't they signed, like, did they sign Ruben Neves in the end?
It's a guy called Noir Confidential at Noir_.
Oh, I know him. Mm. I thought he's a Wolves fan. Yeah, so yeah, what do you think was going on at Wolves at the moment, because there's any Wolves fan listening, because he isn't.
I think what they're doing is really good. I like the football they're playing, like, you know, total football. And I think they look like they're going to be well equipped to come into the Premier League. You know, they actually remind me a bit of Swansea, the way they used to play in the beginning, in the Championship, and then coming into the Premier League, like knocking it around, you know, coming out from the back, all that kind of stuff. I think they're doing really well, and they've got some really good players like Neves. You know, there's players like Neves that was, you know, I think Man United were looking at him before, and Chelsea, and you know, all these clubs. So you know, they got some good players there. But I like what they're doing. You know, Wolves historically are, you know, a good club, and it, you know, it looks like, you know, the owners are going to financially back the manager. You know, they're spending like tens of millions on players in the Championship. So I guess it's only going to be more when they go to the Premiership.
Yeah, they're definitely doing big things there. And then Tony Pulis brought you to Stoke on loan, and you played four games in the Championship for them before moving on to, which most people will probably remember, your really successful time at Cardiff, where you scored 41 goals in 116 games in the league. Tell us a little bit about your time at Cardiff, because our mate Jason, who does the podcast with us, he's a Welshman Arsenal fan, but he lives in Cardiff, and he loves it.
I live about 20 miles away.
Yeah, Gimli lives in Merthyr.
Okay. Yeah, no, Cardiff was like great for me. I loved it, you know. And after the terrible time I did have at Wolves, and to be honest, the terrible time I had at Wolves was because of Mick McCarthy. Really, we just didn't see eye to eye. You know, he wanted me to be like kind of a Niall Quinn kind of target man, and that just wasn't my game. That wasn't the way I was raised. That wasn't the way I enjoyed playing. And to be honest, I wasn't good at it. Just to stand there and get beat up by a centre half and win flick-ons and all that crap. That's not me. You know, of course I have the stature, but you know, people have different styles. And coming up the Arsenal way, I didn't even get taught we didn't even used to head the ball. Like, I never did any exercises of how to use a ball and how to pull off at the back post and all that kind of stuff. We never did that. And you know, Mick McCarthy is a very traditional manager, and that's what he kind of wants from his forward. But then he started doing stupidness to me in the second half of the season. You know, people don't know, they just think that I just couldn't be bothered. You know, he took my squad number away from me. He made me get changed in the youth team dressing room. He made me do double sessions, like, alone. Like, just me and the fitness coach on the pitch, just running around the pitch. You know, he made things really difficult for me. But for me, I was in my mind, I was just thinking, I'm not gonna let this guy get satisfaction and see that he's hurting me. So I used to go in every morning and say, "All right, boss, how's it going? How you feeling?" You know, that kind of thing, and like really wind him up with kindness because, you know, of what he was doing to me. But then, you know, he tried to sell me to, you know, a few clubs, like, you know, that I just wasn't interested in going to. I won't name them because I don't want to be disrespectful to the club. But then one morning I was going to training at Wolves, and this number phoned me, and it was like a private number, and I was like, I don't normally answer private numbers, just in case it's the girl that I don't want to speak to. And so I thought, let me just answer it, because they kept ringing. So I answered it, and it was like, "Hello, this is Dave Jones." And I was like, "Oh," I was like, "All right." And he was like, I've got permission to talk to you." And I was like, "Okay then." And he was like, will you come to Cardiff now?" And I was like, "I'm always training." And he was like, "Yeah, but the manager said you can come to Cardiff." And I was like, you know, I was on my way to Wolves, and then he was like, "Come now." And I was like, "Okay then." So I turned my car around, and then, you know, I drove down to Cardiff, and, you know, I went and met him, and at the time Terry Burton was there as well, and you know, he has an affiliation with Arsenal as well. So I kind of knew that going to a team like Cardiff would suit me with the style of football that I wanted to play, because it was going to be more like passing and, you know, that kind of thing, rather than just like get the ball to the fullbacks, hit the diagonal ball into the centre of the pitch, get knocked down, and we just go from there. You know, so that was probably, you know, that was one of the best decisions I made in my football career.
Talk, talking about that, we had a Cardiff City fan, Gareth McCarthy, send us a few questions. Now, you like these ones. He sent four quick questions. Do you think you reached your full potential? I don't know if he means at Cardiff, but...
In terms of my my career, I'll say no, because I wasted a lot of time. I didn't really take football seriously until I got into my, you know, mid late 20s. So yeah, definitely I didn't fulfill my potential of what it could have been. Nonetheless, I still had a good career and I still achieved what I wanted to achieve when I was young. Like I said, you know, playing for your country, playing in the Premier League, you know, playing in Serie A. And there are things that I wanted to do and I've done. But at Cardiff, you know, it really burns me that I got injured in the final of the playoffs, because I do really feel that, you know, had I stayed on the pitch and not got injured, you know, I do really feel that we would have got promoted to the Premier League that year. So, you know, that's one thing that always hurts when I think about my time at Cardiff.
The next question is, this is one that I was wondering about. Was the England cap a bit of a hindrance on the rest of your career? Because there's been quite a few players that once they've got an England cap, so much more is expected of them, and that must be a lot of pressure.
Not really for me. Like, to be honest, I got one England cap, but I just got a bit unlucky afterwards, because I got Stuart Pearce come to watch me in training a few times, and you know, there was a squad afterwards, and you know, I was injured. You know, so I would have gone into another squad as well, because I remember Capello was happy with, you know, with me, and obviously I was training there, and you know, the way I was, you know, with the rest of the players, you know, he definitely wanted me to come back into another squad, but I didn't, because I had injuries, so I missed out on, I think, two games after that, I think, that season, and I think I missed out on both of them through injury. So that was a bit unlucky, and then, you know, after that I didn't get back in. But you know, for me, you know, people can say whatever they want to say about, you know, he's a one cap wonder and he's won this and he's this and that and blah blah blah. But at the end of the day, I've got one cap. How many players can say they've got an England cap? You know, to play at Wembley against France in front of all their loved ones, it's everyone's dream. So for me, I don't really care what people say about that. People can say, you know, it's only one cap, but you know, most footballers don't get that one cap. So for me, it was a very proud moment for me, myself and my family.
Have you got the shirt on display?
No.
No. Oh, I'd have it up on the wall.
It's at my mum's house. Do you know what? It's funny. I actually had to get my cap reissued last year because someone stole it. So
swines.
Someone stole it at my house. Yeah.
Another question from Gareth. He says, who was the best manager you worked under? I think he might want you to say, was it Dave Jones?
Yeah, Dave Jones. No, it probably was Dave Jones. But Dave Jones had, like, one thing about Dave Jones that was really good is that at Cardiff at the time, you know, there was lots of personality. And Dave Jones was a manager. He wasn't a coach. Terry Burton done all the coaching sessions. But Dave Jones was more of like a man manager. He'd see how he could, you know, if he needed to shout at you, he would. If he needed to put his arm around you, he would. You know, if you needed a couple of days off, you could have them. As long as you turned up on Saturday and performed, you could basically do whatever you want. And, you know, that's what he done. He just managed the players in a way that he made them feel good and it made them feel comfortable, made them feel happy. And, you know, he got the best out of, you know, myself, you know, and other players as well.
And the final part from him is, who was your best striking partner, either at Cardiff or for the rest of your career?
It's funny because I had at Cardiff, I had three like really good strike partners, like Chops, Ross McCormack and Craig Bellamy. You know, I'd have to say Craig Bellamy because, you know, he came and he, you know, I've known Craig since I was at Coventry because we actually roomed at Coventry when I was younger. And, you know, he was never scared to open his mouth or anything like that. But, you know, him going away to like Liverpool and Man City and having the career he had and then coming back, it helped me. You know, I see him come back and I see his professionalism and I see the way he done his recoveries and the way he trained and whatnot. And, you know, obviously he was a class player as well. So in terms of, you know, the best strike partner, it would definitely have to be Craig Bellamy. You know, even though I did have a great, you know, partnership with Chops, that I can't deny that.
Yeah, someone did ask a question about how much money did you lend Chops, but I wasn't sure whether they were taking the piss or not, as he had money issues.
Yeah, he had a gambling problem, Danny.
Ah, that's why I didn't ask it, because I wasn't sure if it was over taking the piss or not.
You'll have to excuse us, Jay. Danny is slightly aspergic, and he doesn't really get questions to people.
No, of course, everyone knows he had a gambling. He has. I don't know if he has any more, but everyone knew at the time he was one of the biggest gamblers in the country. But the thing about Chops is he used to gamble what he didn't have. So that's why he got himself in trouble. You know, I'm not a gambling man, but most people, you know, most players do gamble. But, you know, normally they gamble what they got or they have a limit. Whereas Chops used to gamble what he didn't have and there was no limit. So like he was always kind of like, you know, he'd come to you and like, you know, the day after, like you get paid on like, I don't know, the 25th or whatever, and he'll come to you the day after and be like, Jay, can you lend me such and such until next week, I'll pay you back. And I'm like, Chops, you just got paid. And he's like, yeah, I know, but can you do it for me? And I'll be like, all right, Chops, just this time, but make sure I get it back. And, you know, he always brought it back. But, you know, it was kind of like, you know, he was funny. To be honest, Chops was just funny. Like, we used to come in at halftime at a game, and he'd go into his pocket and check his phone to see if a horse won and stuff like that, like a halftime of a football match. And like, you know, he always had like a, you know, people like normally have money in their wallet, but he had like loads of betting slips. So like, he was always doing stupidness like that. But, you know, again, at Cardiff, he played some of his best football. So like, you know, Dave Jones didn't really say much to him about it.
Just let him get on with it.
Yeah, that's the thing. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, Dave Jones can only do so much. When you leave the training ground, you're your own man. You know, he can speak to you as much as he wants. But if you're going to leave the training ground and go and do stupidness, then that's down to you.
Then your contract expired and you went to QPR in the Premier League for two seasons. And Chris, you wanted to talk about that.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask Jay, I'm a really big fan of Neil Warnock. I know he's not everyone's cup of tea, but I downloaded and listened to his audio book, his autobiography, a few years back. And I just found it really, really enlightening from one of the biggest characters in the game. Is he, you know, was he good to work under, and is he the Neil Warnock that we see? He wears his heart on his sleeve with all the interviews. I mean, is that the sort of manager he is? And did he give you a fair crack of the whip at QPR? Because that was quite a key time, wasn't it?
Yeah, to be honest, first of all, I'd like to say that when I left Cardiff, it was kind of bitter because they actually tried to sell me in my contract was running down, but they tried to sell me in the January transfer window, and I felt that was like really disrespectful, because, you know, instead of like keeping me there and like, you know, negotiating with me, they was like, oh, we want to sell you, if you're not going to sign right now for this, then we're going to sell you. And I was like, can't talk to me like that after what I've done at Cardiff, you know, the way I was playing and the way I've helped the club progress. So I was pissed off with that, and then, you know, it kind of just, it went into the transfer window, and then I went to QPR. But, you know, Neil Warnock was really good. I like Neil Warnock. I think he's, like you said, he wears his heart on his sleeve. He's really honest. You know, and I don't think he got a fair crack of the whip at QPR, really, in the Premier League. You know, there was rumours that, you know, players were going to the, you know, players were going to the chairman saying, you know, he's not doing this, he's not doing it. It's like, it's almost like grassing him up, and, you know, then his assistant is doing this and he's coming in doing this and doing that, and it kind of undermined him. And in the end, you know, he got the sack, but I don't think he deserved it. And I don't think he got a fair crack at the whip there, you know, which is unfortunate, because he's done really well. He's done really well for QPR in the Championship. And then the first season was, you know, it was pretty good. I think, you know, QPR reached their target. And then, to be honest, QPR's been on a downward spiral, I'm sorry to say. Like, QPR, you know, the fans are great. You know, they're terrific and they're always behind the boys. But, you know, so many managers, so many transfers, you know, on names rather than performances. It just didn't go down. It just didn't go down well. And, you know, obviously looking at where QPR are now, you know, it hasn't been good over the last few years. But, you know, Cardiff, you know, Neil Warnock being at Cardiff, and I said it's a good match. And, you know, they're doing pretty well. So, you know, hopefully the boys can get promotion this year.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I'm just looking at your record for QPR. You scored for QPR away at Spurs. Did you celebrate that goal more than any other goal? Because I could just imagine it. What was it like?
Yeah, I was buzzing. I scored against Spurs. And White Hart Lane, I was buzzing with that. You know, we lost. But I remember thinking, when I was on the bench, I remember thinking, come on, man, you've got to bring me on, man. I want to play against these guys. And, like, to be honest, White Hart Lane was a great stadium. Like, the pitch was really nice. The fans were really close, and I liked that. You know, it was kind of intimidating. But yeah, when I scored against Tottenham, that was really good. I got some friends as well that are Tottenham fans, and you know, even though we lost the game, I was like teasing them and saying, "Man, come on! If I had started, man, we could have won." And you know, I was teasing them and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, I was happy to do that.
Josh, you got a question for Jay about QPR?
Yeah, it's probably not a game that you want to remember too well, but you did come on in that amazing 3-2 win on the last game of the season against Man City. Just want to know what the atmosphere was like in the stadium for that.
Do you know what? It's funny because no one really, I don't know if anyone's really said this before, but do you know what Joey Barton did? Joey Barton was actually the reason probably why Man City won in the end, because it wasn't so much that, I mean, don't get me wrong, Aguero scored a goal, and I'm not saying that we let them win, but because there was so much extra time, we knew with about 5 minutes left that we were safe. So in our minds, we was on holiday with 5 minutes to go. We was thinking, doesn't matter if we win or lose now anyway, we're safe. So like, where we was playing really well, and we was holding them and we had our team shape and all that stuff. And then all of a sudden, like, I looked around to the side and you see like the manager and the assistant manager saying, "We're safe, we're safe, we're safe." Obviously everyone's mind and concentration was like, kind of went off the football, and we was kind of like, oh, you know, it's a relief. Like, you know, it doesn't matter if we win or lose now. And then they went and scored. But the emotion, it was a funny day, to be honest, because we was buzzing. Like, we were celebrating with Man City. They were some of their players was in our dressing room. Like, it was funny because, like, you know, they was happy, obviously, because they were buzzing because they won the league. We was buzzing because we avoided relegation, and you know, it was good all round. But it was a great day and it was a great occasion. You know, obviously Joey getting sent off, you know. Everyone just dropped their heads and was like, oh, fuck, like, we're definitely going to lose now. And then, like, you know, we ended up, like, in a great position. I think Jamie Mackie scored. I think Jubril scored, you know. And it went down to the wire, but it was a great day, you know, full of emotions.
You got booked in the 76th minute. Were you arguing with Balotelli? Because that's the moment he got subbed. Was there something to do with that? Or am I imagining it? If it is, I'll take this bit out, I'll edit it out.
No, I can't remember arguing with him, no. I can't remember. But I do remember there was a free kick, and like, the manager said to me, "Keep the ball in the corner."
Yeah.
And I was just like, "Really?" And he's like, "Keep the ball in the corner." And I was like, "All right then." So I just put the ball in the corner. And then like, people was always saying to me, "Why'd you keep the ball in the corner for?" And I was just like, "Well, the manager told me to." So I was like, I put the ball in the corner, and we just like kind of all, you know, I think it was kind of like push up, and then because our defenders were like defending basically in the box for most of the game. You know, it was just like, it was literally counter-attack, park the bus, counter-attack. No, so like, I think the managers wanted like the team to like come up and then just like press them from the front, like in their half. But yeah, it was a great day, to be honest. Like we lost the game, but I remember leaving, like we left the stadium, like we won the league.
Earlier in the season, I think it was New Year's Eve, you came to the Emirates and with QPR and you lost 1-0, and you had Mertesacker, Giroud, and Koscielny and Vermaelen all playing at the back. What do you remember about that game? And did Mertesacker try and give you the elbow?
To be honest, like, I didn't really rate Mertesacker, to be honest. I thought Mertesacker is one of those players that, I mean, don't get me wrong, he's had an amazing career. He's got World Cup winners medal, all that kind of stuff. But I remember always thinking, if this ball goes over the top and I have to run, I know I'm going to get there before Mertesacker, kind of thing. And that's what the manager was saying. He was like, try and expose him, because, you know, his pace was a liability. And, you know, that was always what the manager was saying. But, you know, I think Arsenal's defence has always been a problem, let's be honest. Since you know, them teams, Arsenal has never replaced the Invincibles, or, you know, the Adams, Dixon, Winterburn, Keown defence, you know. And that's why Arsenal are where they are now. You know, what's funny is that era when I was at Arsenal, all the players there that were in the first team at the time, like, I see them now, they're so respectful, they come up. You know, I see Kanu not too long ago, you know, he's taking his son football. You know, he came up to me, gave me a hug, was like, how's it going, Jay? You know, blah, 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 we was talking. You know, I was with Thierry in Dubai, like, you know, I think it was like last year or the year before we was talking. And he was actually saying that it was unlucky that your youth team came through when it did, because, you know, we were the Invincibles. We were the best Arsenal team ever. You know, and that's why you lot didn't get a chance to come into Arsenal's first team. He said, these players that are coming through now are more interested in buying Mercedes and, you know, going on Instagram and this whole lifestyle thing. And, you know, he said, your youth team was much better than them. But you just came through at the wrong era because we was in front of you. And, you know, I'm not bitter about it, but, you know, he does have a point. You know, we won the FA Youth Cup two years on the trot. You know, we used to turn up at... I don't even remember losing many games as a youth team player.
Yes.
Danny, I've got a good question. Well, it's still relevant.
I was waiting for you to jump in.
Again, Jay, I know you're very limited for time, so please say if you need to jump off. But obviously, being a fan and a player and having the opportunity to play for your boyhood club, if you could have the opportunity of one, being it the Invincibles and not having a career with Arsenal like it went down, or having a career with Arsenal but not having the Invincibles era as a fan, which one would you choose and why?
Say that again? Being an Arsenal player?
Yeah, if you could have a career, a full career with Arsenal, as in go through, start, retire at Arsenal,
right, yeah.
But not have the Invincibles era, or have the Invincibles and have the career as it went, going all around the world and playing for different clubs, which one would you choose?
That's a tough one. So you want him to deny the Invincibles for his own glory?
Yeah, I think it's a really good question.
It's a horrible one.
And the thing is, when I've been travelling around to Italy and all that, and I met my wife in Italy as well, so that would mean I didn't meet her.
Oh, no, no. Oh. Take things out of the equation.
I definitely want to have a full career of Arsenal.
Well, she had to answer it that way, didn't she?
She ain't listening to this.
So that's very mean if you give me. You had a quick loan at Sheffield Wednesday, and then you went to a team which I'm going to try and pronounce in the Thai Premier League, Muangthong. Yeah. Is that how you say it?
That's
the only thing I've ever pronounced right in 7 years of podcasting.
I went there. I went there. I wanted to go to Asia, and I went there purely for the fact that the manager at the time was British. And he was saying, and I said, like, what? And I said, seriously, what's the standard like there? Because I don't want to come there, like, get paid. You know, it's not all about money, but I want to come there and, like, play good football, you know? And he was like, yeah, yeah, it's good. You know, it's a high standard for, you know, probably up there with, like, you know, Japan and blah, blah, blah and all this. And I was like, oh, really? Like that? And he's like, yeah, yeah, yeah. So anyway, I ended up going out there. And after about 2 weeks, I realized that it was just like a massive mistake because the football was shocking and, you know, the organization of the league was terrible and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I just said to them, like, after about, you know, they said to me, oh, just like, you know, it's fine, it's going to get better and all this stuff. And I was like, you know, whatever. I used to go home moaning to, like, the missus, like, every day almost, just, like, saying, like, I can't believe I'm here, like, this is just a joke.
Well,
in the end, I just said to...
Go on. Now, carry on.
No, so in the end, I was just like, you know what, guys, you need to rip up my contract because I want to go. You know, you're not going to get anything out of me. I'm just going to be taking your money, so... You might as well just let me leave and give it to someone that wants to be here because I need to go and play at a higher level. And, you know, that's what I did.
Well, you lasted longer than the manager. He only lasted 9 games. You lasted 18, twice as long.
Yeah, I know.
Robbie Fowler managed there, though.
Yeah, I mean, even Robbie, you know, he didn't like it there, to be honest, either. But like, I told you, I was there basically. When the English manager there, he lied to get me there, but he was you know, what managers say what they want to say to get the players, right? So, you know, I can't really blame him for that. But, you know, when he was there, it was all right because I could speak to him and whatnot. But the level was just so poor that I just thought, you know, I've just got to leave.
Don't blame you. Then after that, you went to the Japanese J League Division 2 for Jubilee Iwata. Now, they were, when the Japanese J League started, I was all over it like a tramp on chips. And Dunga was magnificent for those. They won about 3 titles. They won the Asia Cup. They won the other league. But they were having troubles, weren't they? So you went to them in Division 2. You scored 20 goals in 32 games, got them promoted. And then the next season, 14 in 22. So tell us a bit of time about your time with is it Jubilee, or do they say it differently?
No, Jubilee, yeah.
Because that is a massive club, isn't it?
No, it was really good. Like, I had some offers. It's funny because I had offers to go to like J1 teams as well. But then I met the manager, and the manager used to play in that team you were talking about. And I was speaking to him, and he's a new manager, and he was saying like what he wants his club to go and whatnot. And when you meet someone, you know, you can get a good feeling from them straight away. And that's kind of what he gave me. And like in that moment, I just decided, like, we were having a meeting, and I was like, you know what, let's just stop this meeting. Let's just like get the negotiations underway because I want to come and play for this organization. And it was really good. It was like, it was a great decision I made. And you know, I had a really enjoyable time there, to be honest. You know, we got promotion the first year. I got top goal scorer of the league. So it was really good.
Yeah, then after a really good season in 2016, you then went and played for Hokkaido Consadole Sapporo. Now, the thing about that brought you back to my attention, you only went and got yourself a FIFA Inform card, didn't you?
Yeah, man.
How pleased were you?
Yeah, because it's funny because the guy from EA Sports called me. He was like, Jay, you know, you got an Inform card. And I play FIFA all the time, but I don't really play Ultimate Team. I just play against my mates online and whatnot. And he was like, you got an Inform card. I was like, okay, cool. Because I feel like my stats are normally shit on the game. So I said, this is going to be good then. And then, then my son's calling me. Oh, he's like, Dad, I got your card and all this stuff, you know. It was funny.
You got 8 goals and 2 assists in the last 6 games of the season. And I worked it out. If it wasn't for you doing that, they wouldn't have finished 11th and they probably would have got relegated. Don't they give you your special 99 card as well?
Yeah, I got that as well, yeah.
Some players sell them, don't they, for an absolute fortune. You've still got it.
Yeah, I'm not selling that. I'm going to keep it.
You want to sell it to FIFA 19? Before FIFA 19 comes out, then sell it. We all play. All of us here play FIFA. We all play it way too much. So,
Danny, can I ask a very nerdy question just because it's quite relevant? And
we'll all love it.
It's always intrigued me. Jay, I'm a bit of a swot when it comes to collecting shirts and sort of boots and that kind of thing.
You've got the Arsenal home and away shirt for the last 30 years.
You can't ask him for shirts or boots, Chris. Jesus, he's fucking good enough to come on the podcast.
No, I'm not, I promise. No, I've got every Arsenal home and away or alternative shirt since the year I was born, which is 83. But my question to you is was there a favourite shirt that you've got in your collection? And the other thing I wanted to ask you, in terms of boots, this has always fascinated me with different players. What makes, because I vaguely remember you being, I think you wore Adidas and Nike boots in your career. What sort of constitutes a good boot for you? And is it true that even the players at Championship, League One, League Two level still have very sort of unique contracts with their footwear? Is there certain things you look for?
Yeah, I mean, obviously comfort, you know, is always been, you know, top of my agenda, because I think when you're wearing boots, you know, you want to wear comfortable boots at the end of the day. It doesn't matter how much you kind of get from the companies. But, you know, I've wore Adidas. Actually, when I was playing for England, I was wearing Adidas, and they brought a new boot out, and it was killing me. Like, when I got called up to the national team, I had to take painkilling injections in my heel just to do training. Wow. Because they, you know, my boots were giving me such a sore heel that, you know, I couldn't play without it. So, and then there was and then afterwards, that's what kind of kept me out the squads afterwards, my heel. Mm. But, I think when it comes to boots, I think most important is the comfort. And then afterwards, you know, is the financials. And you know what you can get from them.
Mm. And the shirt, did you have was there sort of a certain kit you?
My favorite shirt ever was the 89 shirt, the away Arsenal shirt with like the kind of blue V's on it.
Oh, the bruised banana kit.
Yeah, that one. That was my favorite ever shirt.
One of Danny's favourites back when he could fit in shirts.
I love that shirt.
Until they make an 8XL, I won't be wearing a shirt again. one last Arsenal.
The best shirts I collected was like Maldini. I got Maldini's shirt, Totti and Del Piero.
Oh, stop
that.
Those.
That I played against. Yeah.
You're making me moist.
They're great shirts.
Wow. I'd have just had every shirt off of every. I mean, I love Serie A. I'm an Inter Milan fan, and Chris is an Inter fan as well. And Josh, what's your Italian team, Josh?
Juve.
Yeah, dead to us.
Sorry.
So, one final question about that's related to your career. You're playing with Arsenal legend Junichi Inamoto. Now, he came on for the last minute in about three games at the end of the season. Do you often talk about your time at Arsenal? And is he a nice bloke? Because he was so underrated at Arsenal and then went to the World Cup. And he scored like four goals for Japan in the World Cup. I always liked him.
Not really nice guy. But he don't speak much English. I'm being serious.
Can't you teach him some Cockney slang?
I'm being serious, because like, when I came to the club, I was like speaking to him in English, and he was looking at me like I'm speaking a different language. And I'm like, I said, "You do speak English, right?" And he's like, "Yeah, but you know, I've come back and I've kind of forgot it now." And I was like, "Oh, that's good then."
So you had to learn Japanese.
Really nice, really nice. I got a translator, but he's really, really, really nice guy. He's been a bit unfortunate with injuries and whatnot. I think he played against England and scored at. Did he score at Wembley? Was it 1-1 or something? And he broke his leg in the game.
I think he did. I think you're right.
I don't know. Oh, here we go. He's got goals. He scored five goals for Japan against Yugoslavia, Belgium, Russia, Uruguay, and Ghana. But it doesn't give me the teams that he's played against. So he might well have played. Well, if you say he did, I agree with you.
I think he scored against England. I think it might have been a friendly game or something. But he scored against England. And I think in that same game, he broke his leg. In the last minute.
Have you got, Josh, before we move on to a few questions, have you got anything else you want to ask, Jay?
I was going to ask just on going back to Arsenal and the players that you played with in that youth squad and saying how talented the bunch were. Who was the most talented player that you came through with? I've heard a lot about Jermaine Pennant being unreal. But there, was there another one in there that for you was the best player?
Yeah, the best player for me was David Noble. He was the most
class,
talented player. He, you know, his left foot and right foot was like almost identical. He could he was like kind of compared to like the Joe Cole at that time. Like he was like that good. And you know, Jermaine Pennant, don't get me wrong, Jermaine Pennant was good, but we had a really good team. So it's like it was almost like, even though they were really good, you know, Jermaine Pennant, you know, played right wing, you know, we had Jerome Thomas that was good, we had Stephen Sidwell, Rowan Ricketts, you know, all those players. So it wasn't really like, we didn't really have the conversation of who had the most talent. It was just like, we was one of the most talented youth teams at Arsenal ever. So I would probably say, though, David Noble, because he had all the attributes. But it's funny because, you know, he hasn't had the best career as a professional. So I think that just goes to show you, just because you're that amazing in the youth team, you know, it doesn't mean you can go on to have an amazing career in the senior teams. But for me, it would be David Noble.
He's current club captain at St Albans, I think.
Riding high in the Conference South, I think.
I remember when he signed for Bristol City. That was when I remember, because I like you, Jay, I remember following a lot of the youth teams, and he was just a cultured, classy midfielder, wasn't he? And always had the talent, like you said, both feet. When he went to Bristol City, I think they felt really highly of him. Obviously, it didn't work out. I think he ended up down in this end of the country, at Yeovil and Exeter.
I think he did. I think, again, he was a bit unfortunate with injuries again. Mm. He had, like, ankle problems and knee and, you know, that kind of stuff. So, you know, it was unlucky for him. But, you know, for me, that he's one of my good friends now still. Like, I still chat to him now. You know, our youth team is actually, you know, we're still pretty close. You know, we try and meet up, like, once a year for a few beers or whatnot. And, you know, we're still pretty close.
That was a question that one of our listeners, James Howson, was asking. What was it like, your time through the Arsenal Academy? And are there any talents with you that were with you that you surprised didn't do better than they have? So I suppose the answer to that is Mark Noble, isn't it?
David Noble.
Mark Noble's the one at West Ham. I keep thinking, when I see that Mark Noble, I think, wasn't he at Arsenal? But no, that's the other one.
Do you remember Jay played with Moritz Volz as well, Danny, one of your favourites?
He's an Arsenal scout in Germany at the moment.
Mm.
Moritz Volz wasn't particularly good, like, technically, but he was just a machine. Mm. He could run all day, and he was like, at the time, like, literally, we never done any gym work. We never did any weights or anything. It was just, like, ball work. And, like, even when we used to go to the gym, it was just, like, a muck around. Like, oh, we don't want to do this. Let's just get back out on the pitch. Like, to Neil Banfield. But, like, you know, he was a really nice guy. Trained really hard. You know, he had a good career. But, yeah, I don't know. Like, it's hard to just pick out one person, because when you're playing in a team that's so good, you know, if you was playing in a rubbish team and there was this one person that stood out, then you can say, oh yeah, he was a difference. But when you're playing in a team like our team, you know, it's difficult to just pick one person out. There was a lot of talented players. David Bentley was one of them. David Bentley was really talented. You know, he had a decent career, and then he ended up being like a right winger, but I always looked at him and thought he would have been a better number 10.
That's good. Have you got time for a couple of listener questions?
Yeah, I have.
Okay. Well, our friends Mike and Andy from they're doing Gooners in USA podcast. They're MLS fans. He says, what was the thought process behind going to play in the Far East, Japan and Thailand, rather than exploring the options in other fledgling leagues like, you know, the MLS? He says, cheers, Jay.
To be honest, I'm going to be very honest and blunt here, and I don't want to offend anyone, but the MLS is not really a high standard. To be honest, I mean, we just played Vancouver the other day. We beat Vancouver and we beat Columbus. And like we finished mid table like last year, like you said. But you know, when I think about the MLS, I see players that don't quite make it in the Championship in England, like players, you know, like Bradley Wright Phillips, for example. You know, I don't know, he played like League One, and he might have even gone to League Two, but you know, then he went to America and done well. So to me, you know, I don't look at it like a high standard if players from League One are going to the MLS and being successful.
Yeah, I think he's got the record for the most number of goals in a season as well. I think he went there to as backup to Henry at one point.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Yeah.
Seriously, though, you do find yourself watching MLS and it's like someone's pushed the rewind button. It's that slow at times.
I'm a Portland fan. How dare you?
You're Port Lee.
Oi. Well, Miko was asking the question about your time at Perugia, but we've answered that. And then, I was just looking at your best ever Arsenal 11. I'm glad to see you put Vieira and Fabregas in the middle, just like I did. That's all the questions, Gim. We've had an hour and 20 minutes with Jay.
To be honest with you, Jay, it's very often you get ex-professionals and it's all Arsenal are a wonderful club.
Literally,
you know,
correct.
They're going in the right direction. And you've just come on and you've just been brutally honest about every aspect of career, you growing up as a youngster. And it's really nice to hear. And I hope if anybody has any misconceptions on you, that they listen to this podcast, because you've come across as just an absolutely stunning bloke. We'll wrap this up because I'm sure Jay's got places to be, and you only said half an hour and we take an hour and 20 minutes of your time, so that's fantastic. Jay, thank you so much for coming on. The
no
stories
problem.
That you've told us, and also you've been really honest with us, and we just appreciate any time you've had to give us, and hopefully we're not scared you off and you will come back in the future.
No problem, especially when it's about Arsenal. I always get really passionate about them, and I think, to be honest, I think a lot of Arsenal fans, I know we all want Arsenal to be successful again. But at the end of the day, Arsenal fans just have to get real. And, you know, Arsenal are no longer competing for the Champions League anymore. So it pisses me off when I hear Arsenal fans saying, oh, we can get back in the Champions League. I don't even see them winning the Europa League this year.
No, I struggle to see, especially with Lacazette being injured as well. I think it's going to be too much of an ask.
You know what annoys me the most is when we say, oh, you know, we've got the Caraba Cup. I remember when Arsenal played a youth team in that cup. Now all of a sudden it's a good cup because we keep winning it. It's just a joke, to be honest. But anyway, we can have another conversation another day about these Arsenal guys.
Yeah, man. Oh, we, like I said, we really appreciate your time. Thank you so much for coming on.
No problem. I appreciate it. Nice speaking to you guys.
Cheers,
thank
Jay.
You, Jay.
Cheers,
have
Jay.
A great day.
Thank Bye-bye. You. Bye.
That was Jay Bothroyd, gents. So what did you make of that?
See, he's gone full WWF, not WWE, the new stuff. He's gone old school. He hasn't taken any prisoners. That's fucking brilliant. More professionals need to come out and basically tell it as it is. That's what they need to do. It's brilliant.
But, and just
by the way, as well, we beat Awara Red Diamonds 2-1 in 2013, Danny. I know you were itching to hear that.
That was take you fucking long enough. That was 2 hours ago. Hold on, get him back. Jay, we can text him.
I didn't want to interrupt Jay, so I just thought I'd fill you in afterwards.
Well, you could have sent the
ticket to the schoolboy.
Did anyone hear him doing up his jacket? I think he might have been on his way to training.
I think he was.
Sure, so.
The end.
Either that, or he's got massive flies.
Yeah, he was. It sounded to me like he was putting on his training top and possibly getting on a minibus to work.
Zipping up his little bag with his toothpaste and things in.
Yeah.
Boiling his pot noodle kettle before he left.
For anyone listening, Jay did do the mandatory, we'll give you half an hour, and ended up staying an hour and 20 minutes. So just, we'd like to thank him if he's having a listen, but probably not. But I think you'll agree, what a great podcast that was.
Good stuff.
Another good find. Expect him to be plagiarised by every other podcast within a week.
Literally, there will be no meat on the bone by the end of the month. But at least we had an exclusive among other Arsenal podcasts that we won't name.
Because you're not going to be horrible, are you?
I'm going to be nice.
You're gonna be
I'm
nice
always here. Nice to everybody. And I love everybody. And I apologise for not being here yesterday because I had a very, very wet living room.
But did you pull the fish in your pants when they were flapping around on the floor? Because that's where they used to being.
Seriously, there was some fish in that tank that was so big I couldn't have even put them in my pocket.
And wasn't it nice, by the way, that Jay could speak so openly without you know, without sort of causing, there was no controversy, there was no stirring. He was just very honest about his career in a general way, wasn't he? Like, just very, very blunt, but very honest. I like that.
Like, I always feel like the Dave Hillier that when we first got him and it was an exclusive and he was fairly unknown on Twitter, that Dave Hillier that we had then for that first interview, and then the Dave Hillier that we had when he was being employed and doing bits and pieces for Arsenal, were maybe a slightly watered down version where he'd
be careful.
But I mean, you can understand that. But my point being, like Chris said, it was so nice to get someone on that could just be so impactful. I mean, he not only spoke as someone that knew the inner workings of the club and had played for them and had grown up training there, but also someone at the other side of the coin was just a fan.
Spoke passionately, yeah.
I think that came across, and I think the listeners, and hello listeners, don't forget to give us a like and put your comments on the bottom. Danny's probably written some shit in there already. But yeah. Right, so all that's left then is to thank my wonderful guests tonight. Danny, Chris, and Josh.
You had to be here.
I had to be here because I arranged all of this, and it was 7 a.m. in Japan, and I really didn't want to piss off an ex-Arsenal player.
No, someone who's 6'3" and an athlete.
So at 10 to 12. So that was a Bergkamp Wonderland podcast. Thank you so much for listening, and keep it Arsenal. Good night. 10 minutes in the future, that would have been good morning.